is the time. And get crazy, have some fun. Hello and welcome to the Dad Podcast, take two.
Take one was so awesome, it could only go up from here.
Thankfully, we were maybe only a minute and a half in, and I know this isn't humorous to you, the listener, but just in case there's some kind of a tone that you're picking up on, something tastes weird in your earbuds, if there is such a thing, we went about a minute in, and I hit record, but the recorder was not recording. So anyway, we are back, and I'm going to say it all again, because it's the God's honest truth, is I'm back with the author of my favorite new parenting book, Earn It, by Dr. Michael Wetter, What to Do When Your Kid Needs an Entitlement Intervention. We're going to do applause again. We're going to go right into it. And Dr. Wetter has a ton of topics that he is thrown in, and the one that leapt out to me was that you have people now coming to you as a therapist, right, or psychologist. You went over that. Do that again.
We'll do that again.
Always get it mixed up.
That's all right. It goes back to that old argument that, you know, all poodles are dogs, but not all dogs are poodles. Psychologist is actually a licensed term, and all psychologists can practice therapy, psychotherapy, but not all therapists are psychologists. Therapist is pretty much anybody who wants to call themselves a therapist who listens, almost akin to the term coaching. But a psychologist is actually a licensed term. You actually have to earn a doctorate in addition to a master's very often or a bachelor's degree. And it's a licensed clinical term. So I'm a clinical psychologist, and I can choose to practice psychotherapy. You could be a therapist with a master's or even a bachelor's level degree. It's a more loose term.
Gotcha.
Doesn't mean there's bad therapists out there.
No, yeah.
It's just
yeah.
a differential. Yeah.
So, and you have clients, patients is a better word, patients coming to you saying that, you know, I need help as a parenting coach. Like,
if it was only that easy. You know? I need help as a parent. You know, I wake up every morning saying that to the mirror.
I would like to have that happen with my therapist, just to come to him with, that's got to be a lot of pressure, actually, now that I think about it, where somebody comes to you and be like, I need help as a parent. Like, don't we all?
Don't we all? You know, it's like, pull up a sofa. Let's talk.
What do you know? Give me some players.
Well, you know, very often my parenting mistakes come out in somebody else's psychotherapy because they're talking about what they do. I go, oh my God, I do that myself.
Yeah.
You're right. You know, and you usually don't see that.
But that's part of the reason why you would go to talk to a therapist is because they can look at it much like a director would see a movie or play.
Well,
they can see the big picture.
You're looking at, you know, everybody has blind spots.
Yeah.
We all have blind spots. And that's why, you know, having an objective perspective. And when parents call me up, usually the first step is they want to bring their child, whether, you know, they're 10 years old or 15 years old or some cases 30 years old, to my office for therapy and for psychological treatment. And at the same time, there's still, especially at that age, sometimes there's a stigma. Sometimes it's difficulty, even just scheduling. And sometimes, you know, the child isn't ready for it. They don't want to do it. You know, sitting down for an hour talking with a psychologist, a doctor about their feelings, you know, about their emotions, about the turmoil they'll feel. No, you know, they're just not into that. So one thing that has come up and has become increasingly popular in my practice, which I love doing, and I think it's actually a wonderful intervention, is we can call it teletherapy, telemedicine, video conferencing, whatever, but more in the vein of parent coaching. And so what I've done with a lot of the families that I work with now is parents have the opportunity to take 20, 30 minutes with me, however many times per week they need, you know, as an issue comes up, we schedule a time, we talk about that particular issue as it comes up with an intervention, a way of dealing with the situation in that moment. And if need be, and if it's at all possible, we have the son or daughter participate either, like I said, in a televideo session or on the phone or whatever it may be. And it's more, I would say, conducive to effective immediate intervention versus long-term therapy. And again, when we start thinking about the mind of a teen or a young adult, you know, sometimes you don't need more than 20, 30 minutes. Okay. That's about the attention span that they can take and handle. They love the idea of doing it via, you know, almost like the FaceTime or Skype type of technology where they don't have to disrupt their lifestyle. They don't have to find parking. They don't, the parents don't have to commute. Yep. They can do it at home. They can do it from their bed. You know, psychotherapy and my particular practice is one of the, those, I would say, fortunate in the healthcare industry where you don't have to actually touch the patient. Yes. In fact, if a therapist or a psychologist is ever touching you, they're doing it wrong. Okay. And I would say, you know, I would say that's the one thing, you know, you definitely want to have eye contact. You
don't my therapist, doc, I don't want to crap on your point, but she is super hot. So, and I feel like it really helps me release a lot of tension. Is that inappropriate?
Well,
that,
I guess when that gives new meaning to how do you feel, you know, it's, you know, tell me how that feels, you know, that's a process called transference.
But
we don't
it's
have time
really
for
weird
that.
When she brings up my mom when we're doing therapy.
Yeah, well, you know, that's another podcast.
Okay,
you got to bring me back. That's a whole other podcast. We can make a series out of that We can make a weekly series out of that one. So, it really is, I find to be an effective intervention. And that's why I actually refer to it more as parental coaching.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. The parents don't need therapy. And sometimes your kids don't need therapy. You know, therapy is a process. Therapy really, it's not about the intervention. It's about the process. It's about looking for trends, looking at patterns, looking at the way we do things over time. And sometimes, you know, when we're parents and we have kids, we don't want a process. We want an intervention.
Mm.
And having that ability to reach out, schedule something very often in the same day, take 20, 30 minutes, get to the nuts and the bolts, it really is coaching. You know, you don't want to, you know, think of it in terms of sports. If you have a son or daughter who's in softball or baseball or something like that, and there's something wrong with their swing, you don't want to set up time with the coach and say, okay, so we want to work on his swing. And the coach come back and said, okay, that's fine. Why don't we meet once a week for the next year and a half? And we'll take a look over time to see how we can improve the swing. It's like, no, let's set up 15, 20 minutes. Let's look at the swing. I'm going to give you some strategies you can try.
I see, yeah.
We'll go from
it's
there.
It's more concentrated for what could be considered to be a faster result. I know it's not really focused on getting to a finish line.
Correct. And again, it's not for everybody, okay? My son or daughter is depressed, or socially they're experiencing tremendous anxiety. Those are topics that are not necessarily a quick fix or a quick intervention.
Right.
Those are more process-oriented, therapeutic, and require more cognitive behavioral intervention. We're talking about things that, you know, there's a test coming up and they don't know how to deal with it, or they just had a fight with their friend or their girlfriend or boyfriend and they're really having a tough time, or we're going on an upcoming trip and there's a lot of things that are going on in the family that are causing distress and we don't want to have that on the trip. We're talking about more situational.
Yeah.
Type issues. And that it really is a, my patients have used the term lifesaver.
Yeah.
Okay. And not to be melodramatic, but it really is effective.
Well, and I can imagine if it's like having a buddy, you know what I mean? But the difference is that my buddy happens to be an expert in the thing I'm leaning on. You know what I mean?
Yeah, like absolutely.
Instead of talking about what I'm going to do to put a lift kit on my truck and or what's going on with the Cowboys, you have a sounding board.
Well, yeah, exactly. Like AAA.
Yes, exactly. You know, which I experienced this morning.
There you go. It's like AAA. I'm more reliable. You know,
yeah, exactly. Yeah. Do you do the window thing when you say we'll be there? There's nothing more annoying, by the way. No other place could get away with the. The starter went out of my minivan, is what the doctor's telling you about. And I had to, not only did it get stuck in front of party, this is the other thing. This is the thing that makes me doubt any kind of faith-based system. I'm sorry, I'm going to go off on a little tirade here, but the point is that we're doing something for the Rotary Club here in Burbank. My wife's a new member. We're doing a benefit. They're giving money to the schools. It's a big thing. We've got, you know, kegs of beer and food and everything in the back of this minivan. And then they say, we forgot tablecloths. Can you swing by and get us tablecloths? We're like, absolutely. We got it. You know, and it's just a group of people who are doing good for the community and you feel solid, you know, and you go and you get six cheap paper tablecloths that you come out and then you turn the key and the minivan just goes, and nothing happens. So then I go, okay, we call them. Is there anybody to come here? And then you get on the other line, like, and it's the poor person who wants to help you, but it's like, there is no one here, right? So then now it's a thing where we're waiting for AAA. Is there any other industry? Imagine if somebody called you as a patient and you said, well, I could be there in an hour, but you don't show up actually for an hour and a half, and that's good.
I think if we can get AAA to partner with the cable company.
Oh, right.
You know, we'll come and we'll tow your car and we'll fix your cable, but it'll be a window between 8 and 5.
Yes, exactly. Anytime in there.
So just stay home.
Yeah.
And we'll show up.
I like the window between 8 and 5. Do you prefer morning or afternoon?
Yeah, exactly.
Is that all of them? What are you talking about? Right.
Well, 8 p.m. and 5 a.m. That's what we're talking about.
And I feel like an underrated person. It takes a skill set to be that phone person for AAA and to go, okay, well, we've got somebody dispatched. They should be there within the hour.
You have to have a particular talent for that.
Yes.
And then the
calories that they're burning, like, I wish that they burnt these calories, the calories they burned to blow sunshine up my ass. I wish they burned it on making their system more efficient. I wish it was a thing where, because I called them, they said he'll be here within about a half hour, right?
Yeah.
So 20 minutes into this half hour, I get a call from the guy who's, I'm assuming now there's a dispatcher at the, he goes, the guy's on his way. And I was like, great. Awesome. And then he goes, he'll be there in about 10 to 15 minutes. 10 to 15 minutes, I get a text alert from my phone saying he's on his way. And I'm like, what's going on? Is it you feel like the more you touch me, the more I feel better about it? And then you could follow him on a map, which I think is also not as rewarding as they think it is.
No, like, it is.
All I did was open the map and go, he's on the freeway. I was still on the way. Like, what does that even mean?
So, Justin, how does that make you feel?
Exactly right. It makes me feel like I hate my mother.
You should talk to your hot therapist about
that. Exactly. I do. I really think I do. And I really want to talk to her why I sometimes accidentally call my wife my mother, too. But no, I like it. It is your roadside assistance to parenting. It is like I call up and I could say, hey, do you... And in reality, the fact that you're just going to be on call at any given moment is pretty far-fetched, but you could maybe be able to talk to somebody in a couple hours.
And like I said, it's not that, oh, yes, I'm available. I'm just sitting here by the phone waiting for you. It's that, look, I'm busy right now, but let's set a time that we're going to talk or connect via video in about 3 hours.
Yeah.
Okay. Most things can be attended. In my practice, I've never been able to, I've always been able to attend to someone within 12 hours.
And is this, because the other thing that I think of when I notice this stuff is that, and I don't know, I like because you're a straight shooter, is that this seems to be a new trend, obviously, mm-hmm. in parenting. I mean, even you're noticing it to be a new thing.
Yeah.
And I wonder, every time I hear about this stuff, whether it's good or bad, all I could think of, and my father is great. I love my dad. He's a great guy and was a great father in raising me and stuff, but I could never imagine my father doing such a thing.
Oh,
I don't think any of us could imagine our parents, you know, do it. And so then you start to see these trends, but maybe I'm Rorschaching it a little bit. I want to see. But. I mean,
there's still it's fascinating to me that there's still a tremendous resistance, okay, to reaching out. That being said, more and more people are being willing to reach out.
Because they want to be good parents, right?
Because they want to be good parents. Here is the thing that I would comment on is, people are still not reaching out at the right time. People are waiting for something to happen, okay? And when something happens, when there's a crisis moment, a traumatic moment, and what I would urge parents to consider is be a bit more proactive, be preventative versus reactive. And I find that the call comes to me after something has happened, okay? Which is fine. I mean, we're all like that. You know, you don't take your daughter to the pediatrician before she gets sick, right? You take her when she's sick.
And we don't live in the Minority Report where we could see the thing
that's
coming.
That's correct. But you can start to see, like, they're just not acting like themselves, okay? They seem to be more withdrawn, or, you know, they seem to be a little bit more anxious than normal. They seem to be a little bit down, or we've got something coming up that we know is sort of an aberrant event in our life, whether it be for good things or for bad things. You know, in those situations, when you know something big is coming down the line, don't wait for the night before that big thing to give a call. Do it a few months ahead of time if you know. Being more proactive is actually the trick.
Yeah.
And I think parents these days now are being, I would say, more responsible and willing to make that call. It's just still narrowing that time gap of when it's most effective.
And to go back to your coaching analogy, it's like if you think of this thing, maybe it's a test, maybe it's a social event for the kid, or maybe it's a job interview that the kid's going to, you know, any of those kinds of things. You want to practice before the big game. You want to get your, you know, you want to go over X's and O's with
Dr.
Wetter.
And it would be very much akin to using that analogy. You know, it's the night before the big game and my kid still hasn't, you know, mastered his swing. So I'm going to call up, you know, the coach and say, hey, he's not doing well on the swing. The big game's tomorrow morning. What can you do? versus knowing this, you know, 3 weeks ahead of time. My kid's still not doing the swing. What can we do in the meantime to get him ready for the big game? That makes all the difference in the world. So I can't tell you how many times in the past I've gotten calls from parents saying, oh my God, we've got something coming up in an hour. We need you to talk to him. And it's like,
really?
Well, I'm not the miracle worker, you know, yeah. It's not even about me.
And do they want you to talk to the kid?
Yes. You know, and it's not even about, so then they put the poor kid on the video and you see him, he's like a deer in headlights, you know?
This is like kind of a sitcom. Tell the therapist why you owe this to me.
That's right.
Tell Dr. Wetter what you said to me. You're not going to believe this, Doc.
Like, well, no. But then he looks like he's, you know, he or she has got, you know, deer in the headlights. Yeah. I've got deer in the headlights. I don't know what I'm supposed to do. You know? And so I say, you must be pretty nervous. Yeah, I'm pretty nervous. I'm nervous too. I don't know what I'm supposed to do with you. And, you know, and at that point in time, it's not about the child. It's not even about the parent. It's not even about me. It's about the timing.
Yeah.
You know, when is it easier to repair a car? When you first notice the clinking sound or the clunking sound, or when it's in the red zone?
Yes.
Okay.
Or when the clinking sound stopped to drive the side, waiting an hour and a half for AAA.
Even better. There you go. Like, I'll get to it. I'll get to it. I'll get to it. And
hey, guess what? I'm getting to
and
it.
And it got to you. And it got to you.
That's a good point. Is there any, because I feel like there's so many more things that people are worried about now. Like, yeah, there's, we talked about it a lot. This is because of your book, kind of my new theory is why there's this growing trend of like stress and anxiety in high school age kids. A lot of people are saying that they're under more academic pressure than before. And I'm sure that that's true. But I think a bigger part of it is the fact that more and more parents are spending the time when the kid is young trying to deflect, like shielding them from negative experiences or emotions. And so then when they get older and there's real consequence to those feelings and actions, it's harder for them to process.
Well, what we're looking at really, and it's a sort of a, this is my, the best way I can coin this term is we're looking at an erosion of resiliency in children.
I like that.
Trademark. Here we go. Okay. So, you know, but really it's because we do want to protect our children and we do want them to, you know, not have to suffer. But the cost of always protecting them is they never learn to develop those sort of defensive mechanisms of appropriate, healthy defensive mechanisms themselves. So the capacity for resiliency to tolerate distress. Remember, we can't always resolve distress. Mm-hmm. Sometimes you have to survive through it. Okay. There's not always a problem you can fix. There's not always a happy ending that you can resolve by talking about it. Sometimes things fall apart. Friendships fall apart. You know, you study hard and you still don't get the grade that you were thinking you're entitled to or deserve. How do you bear that distress? That all falls under resiliency. And what I start to see nowadays more and more is with parents trying to protect their children and insulate them from those experiences, the child, whether they be at 7 or 17 or 27, now lack the capacity to survive through it. They decompensate. They go, oh my God, what's going to happen now? How am I going to do this? I won't get into the college that I want, or nobody will love me, or whatever it may be. So it's not about letting our kids suffer, okay, and saying, oh, well, you know, here you go, stewing it.
I'm nailing it.
that's right, exactly.
But, see him crying over there? That's me parenting.
That's me. You know, yeah, earn it. You know, earn it, kid. Earn it. You know, you know, with a beer in one hand, you know. No, it's about.
He's so stressed he's smoking at 14. I'm really doing great. I'm doing it.
See, Doc, I follow it. You know, my kid's going
to
be.
Your book has meant the world to me. Can you imagine that at a signing?
Oh, my God. That's right. The poor kids there is just shaking because they can't handle.
Look how petrified he is by life. Right. Oh, he's really processing the stress.
He works for AAA now. You know. So.
I'm sorry.
No, it's great. This is where it comes back to this notion of what are we preparing them for? Okay. How are we? So, and again, it doesn't mean it goes from one end of the spectrum to the other. It doesn't mean you can't support them. Okay. I think that parents will say, well, okay, so I'm not going to hover. I'm not going to defend. I'm not going to protect them from this. So, you know, like you said, you know, you go sit there in the corner and, you know, deal with it. It's not about it. You can support them, but just don't solve it for them. Okay. And I think a lot of, you know, what does that look like? What does that mean? How do you support them without solving it? Saying, yeah, I know you studied really hard and I know you wanted to have a better grade. These things happen. So it's not just that you did, you know, you didn't do as well as you want. How are you going to pick yourself back up? How are you going to motivate yourself? How are you going to use this experience? Remember, failure isn't a bad thing if it's used in a constructive way.
That's, I had a recent, I'm kind of in the middle of this with my older son, which is uncharted territory for him. Mm. He's always been kind of an anxious kid. And what comes from having an anxious kid, as I'm sure many of us can relate, is that usually you're on top of things because you're in a constant state of trying to avoid more anxiety.
That's right. That's right.
So, and so usually you do a little better in school because you feel like you have to work a little harder and all that stuff. And he all of a sudden has come into this mass dose of confidence, which I'm very happy about. And it is a very interesting fork in the road where even his teacher is like, he's become very confident, which I like, but I don't know that I really like. She's got like her and I are having this same feeling because it just came to light recently. Mm-hmm. He's in more of an advanced class. And so one of the reasons why I like this teacher is I think she would very much prescribe to the things you talk about in your book, Earn It, is that she wants the kids not only to learn academically, but she wants them to, while they're learning, develop actual life skills that will help them once they're out of elementary school and beyond so that.
Great.
She gives them a lot of the onus. A lot of the responsibility falls on them, and she lets them kind of fall on their face so that then she could go, no, no, that's not how it works. You need to fix this.
Right.
So he has these online or that they can do in the classroom, but they call them like STEM activities, and he's supposed to have been doing these all year, and then all of a sudden it came to light that he's like 24 behind or whatever, right? And so he hasn't been doing these, and he came home and told us, and then she pulled me aside at pickup and was explaining this to me. And so I kind of went through this thing. I'm like, well, normally when you'd come home, I would say, is there any work you have to do? And you'd be like, nope. And so I'd be like, all right. And he'd get a little time to play some video games, or he would play with him and his brother would play Legos, or they'd go in the backyard and they would throw the ball around, play some guns like that.
Yeah.
But it was very free. Like I had no restriction, whatever you wanted to do. The only thing I did is I would limit the game time, which I never thought I'd be that dad. But anyway, point is, we go through this whole thing, and then now he's got to do this stuff. And so now I'm riding him. I'm like, you got to do it. You got to get on it and do it. And he gets upset. And my way of explaining this to him was I said, listen, I know this sucks. But unfortunately, the way that you learn to never do this is that sucky feeling. If you never want to feel, I go, that's what you got to do. And I said, here's the other part of it, son. I go, focus on that light at the end of the tunnel. I go, this has been my experience, is that I go, you can't focus and run towards it and kind of half-ass your way through all of this stuff you have to do. Sure. I go, but you chip away, you focus on the first one that's right there, and you just focus on how much you're getting closer to that light at the end of the tunnel, and you just do one, and then the next one, and then the next one. Don't think about the 20.
Yeah.
Think about the one you're doing right now.
Right.
And how that's going to bring you one step closer to the goal. And I said, I promise you, when you finish them all, it will feel like a weight has been lifted off of you, and it'll be great. And he was, and I said, and here's the other part of it. I said, I don't like this. I said, but it's my job to make this kind of not fun for you, in the sense that it would be easy for me to fix this and try to walk you through. Because he comes to me, he gets tired, and he gets lazy, and he wants me to answer the question. I don't know what this question means. And I'll tell, I go, read it to me. Like, and I could tell.
Yeah.
He wants me to accidentally stumble into giving him an answer.
It's like, he's hoping you're as tired as he is.
Exactly. He does.
Exactly.
They kind of reverse interrogate you.
That's right. I don't know what this is. Do you know what this is? Yeah, I know. It's easy.
Let me do the taxes.
That's right. Exactly.
And so that was the moment where I put my hand on his shoulder and I said, son, I need you to know that I love you more than anything in this world, and I think you're great and all that. I said, but I'm not that dad. I'm not the dad who's going to just sit here and you're not going to trick me into giving you the answer. I said, I'm the dad who's going to call you if I think you're being lazy, because I know what you're capable of.
Yeah.
And I know that you could do better than this, and that I need you to apply yourself.
Yeah.
And I said, so go get it done and move on.
I think all that's great. You know, I think all that's wonderful. And there's one thing I would add to that, to dovetail on top of everything you said, which is to make sure he recognizes this is the consequence of your inaction.
Yes.
Okay. to let him, because what I heard you saying is, look, you know, I'm going to be that dad. I'm the guy who's going to ride you. This is on me. It's my job to make this suck for you. Yeah. And it's like, well, then why are you absorbing the, he's the guy who didn't do the 24 stem exercises.
That's a good point. Yeah.
So it's like, you know, son, look, I get it. This does suck, but you're the one who didn't do it 24 times ago.
Right.
If you had done it when it was due, you wouldn't be in this position.
I didn't make that my through line, but that was a part of one of the things I said was, I said, it's supposed to feel bad because this is why I've told you why we have a motto in our family that we work first, then we play.
Right.
I said, this is why I tell you this. I go, when you come home from school and your mom and I say there's no work and you say there's no work, then we assume that there's no work.
That's right.
I said, but you were wrong. And now it sucks.
Now you got a lot of work.
Now you got a lot of work and you got to focus on, it feels like so much work because you're so far behind. Whereas if you do it little by little, and I use the example, we're building a fort in the backyard and I go, I'm not trying to bang out this fort in a weekend. I'm doing whatever I can because I don't want it to be hectic. I don't want it to be stressful. I want it to be something fun we do.
Well, it's, you know, I use this this story to when I work with my clients about repression, about feelings and emotions. But it's true for actions, too, and behaviors. And it's a true life story. It happened to me. I call it the trash compactor story. When I was, I think I was a sophomore in college, and I moved into an apartment with a roommate of mine. And it was a beautiful apartment. It was one of those townhouses, okay? And it came fully equipped. It had, you know, upstairs, downstairs, and it had a microwave built in. And, you know, this is like, wow, this is Shangri-La at the time. And it came with a trash compactor, which I had never had before in my life. Didn't know anything about it. And he didn't either. So we were just stoked because it's like, wow, you push this button and the trash goes away, okay? It's like, you know. And the irony is, you know, our apartment was just across from the, you know, the trash dump or whatever, the canisters outside where you take your trash. But like, no, push this button, it goes away. So we just keep doing it. Every time, you know, we push the button, Mudar goes down, press it down. About 3 weeks later, I remember I came home. It was midday. I made myself some lunch. I threw it in the trash and I pushed the button as per usual. And all of a sudden I hear this, you know, and I look and there's this little curl of smoke that comes up from the trash compactor. To me, it's almost like the soul of the compactor was going to heaven, you know, and I'm pushing and pushing and pushing the button and nothing is happening. It's just a deafening silence. Okay. And I'm like, all right, I guess it's time to take out the trash. So I jimmy open the trash compactor and I pull out the little handles from the little hefty bag thing and they promptly almost like disintegrate in my hands. Why? Because there's probably about 70 pounds of compressed trash.
Wow.
Okay, over the back, because we're just two guys. You know, that's all there is. So what I had to do is I had to take out a big hefty bag, and I had to sit there, and I had to sift through the trash.
A dense brick of trash.
Just, you know, and it took about 3 hours because I kept gagging. We had like three-week-old chicken bones, eggshells, and cans of cat food, and, you know, whatever else.
High life.
Oh, yeah. You know, and, you know, bong ash or whatever it was, you know, so, you know, we were just sifting through it and everything. And I would have to go outside to breathe and come back. And that's why it took so long. And I swore to myself, I will never, ever let it get this bad again. I will take it out as it needs to get taken out and dumped versus letting it just compile and compress all the way down. Didn't matter that the motor was shot to hell anyway, and we couldn't use it anyway, but that's the sort of the same analogy I use for emotional repression as well as a behavioral repression, which is if you delay in dealing with what needs to be dealt with at the time, you're going to deal with it later. It's not like you're getting rid of it. It's going to come back. And when you have to deal with it all at once, it's going to suck. Okay. There's no way around it. It's going to. So when people say, I don't want to deal with these emotions that I've been repressing for 10 years because I know it's going to suck. I say, yeah, you're right. It's going to suck, but we're going to get through it now so you can deal with the stuff that's coming up. Same with your son. Yeah. You know what? This really does suck. You missed 24 assignments. There's no way around it.
Yep.
There's no way to make this fun. There's no way to make this cool. There's no way to make this entertaining. But what you're going to take away from this, I like how you said the forest through the trees, you're going to see the end, see the light at the end of the tunnel. But what I really want you to take away from this is how much it sucks when you don't do it.
Yeah, to make you do it.
To make you do it.
To make you do it. All right, let's take a break. And when we come back, I think this is something that we're all dealing with. And it's another thing I personally am staring down the barrel of is the overscheduled kid. My kids, they're taking hip hop class and then one's taking piano lessons and then the other one's taking chess after school. And then now we're about to add flag football into that mix. And And it's funny because I think, we'll get your take on it, because I just feel like as a parent, we're like, well, I want to make sure my kid's doing enough. But me personally, and I don't know if I'm being selfish, I'm like, I just want to drive you around all that. Like, I also have things I have to get done. So
I'm screwing up presently. So this is a good subject. Good.
All right. Yeah, perfect. Yeah, yeah, Let's talk about how we're not nailing it after this.
Time, why you punish me? Like we're crashing into the shore, you wash away my dreams. Time, why you walk away? Like a friend with somewhere to go, you left me crying. Can you teach me about tomorrow?
Probably more somber moments in that song, but it's so funny. It has to be when you're connected to your life. I think everybody goes through this. Like, I'm kind of a kid of the 90s, so
sure.
To me, Hootie and Blowfish, even though I get that they're a joke, like, to sit here and I think I don't, like, sit there and listen to this song and remember driving around in my 76 GMC Jimmy pining over a lost love. Which is so stupid to think that, you know what I mean? Like, Hootie and the Blowfish is your thing. Like, all the B-sides, man.
I don't think that phrase has ever been uttered, or at least I haven't heard of it. Exactly.
Well, it's just because I think we got my generation, we get to get into our 40s and 50s. It's already sad enough when you hit that point in your life. Like, it's funny. I realized this recently. Classic rock to me has always been good rock. Like, that's what it really means. Yeah, it means good rock and roll music.
Sure.
Where it was there was a revolution aspect to it, and there was a passion to it and a creative element to it, right? And then now it's start when they start playing the songs like this, even though Hootie will never get played on a classic rock station, I know. But when they start playing like anything, like Pearl Jam even, on a classic rock station, you're like, wait a minute, I think I just became my dad. But I like it. I love it because it's a great mix of everything.
I had that moment today, actually, because I was thinking when I was in elementary school and we'd be in carpool, that the mothers who would drive us in carpool would listen to the oldies but goodies, but it would be the Beatles.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
And the Beatles back then was about 10, 15 years removed from where we were. Okay. And now I hear like the classic 80s, classic 90s, and I go, there's nothing classic about this. They're really, you know, all of a sudden you hear the Thompson Twins, like the Thompson Twins, this is even nostalgic. This is traumatic. At what point does, music become traumatic? And I'm like, I can't even believe this,
To think 80 years from now, there's going to be kids in college that are going to be studying the American classics. Of the B-52s.
Oh, my God.
Love Shack is going on.
Rock Lobster. Yes. No, it's on the flip side.
That's in the secondary course. The introductory is Love Shack. If you want the more advanced,
you got to go to 102.
Yeah, if you want to go, you got a deep dive, you go to 19th century 80s classic or 20th century.
I love it. There you go.
Oh, man. All right. So, time.
Yes.
The over scheduling of kids because. And I get it. I get it as a parent, right? Where we have this weird thing where you want your kids to be well-rounded. The one, it's funny because it literally came up this morning, is that my younger son, 6, they have a chess class.
Yeah.
And I like the idea of chess. I think it's fun, but mostly because chess has really good PR.
Yeah.
Chess, in my opinion.
I've never heard that before. That's great.
No, it does. Is that because chess is
intellectual.
It's very simple game. If you really look at it, it's got very basic level. But because it's strategy, and when we off, chess is the Shakespeare of board games.
Yes.
Like,
yes.
If you think chess is stupid, it's because you don't get it. You're a moron.
I play checkers, so exactly. I got it. In total.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. So when a guy could come in, say he's really good at chess or just understands the rules of chess.
That's right.
And happens to have a tetanus shot and a clear background check. He could come in and charge $185 for a 6-week or 2-month course in chess for elementary school. If you find an affluent neighborhood such as Burbank, California.
That's right.
And so my son came home and he goes, I want to take chess class. And I said, I go, great. And he go, and then my wife is like, it's $185 as she's writing the check. I went, hold on, time out, everybody.
Isn't there a 99 cent app you can get on your phone?
Exactly. I said, why is this the one thing I'm not buying digital? Why is I said, I go, why? Because with the 6 year old, I always got to be careful. He's a master manipulator. I go, why do you want chess? He goes, because, and he knows, he's six, and he knows what I'm digging for and how to avoid it, but he's not so smart yet, which I don't know. When he's older and he can actually outsmart me, that's when I'm really afraid. But anyway, so he says, no, I want to learn to play. I want to learn to play chess. I go, well, I could teach you to play chess. And then this is what he says. And if my wife wasn't there, then he would have lost. But he said, he goes, not as good as this guy does. He's a chess teacher. This is what he does. You tell jokes. and I kind of look at him and I go, hold on. He goes, and he won't let me get a word in. He goes, and I could teach all of you to play chess after I learn. I go, but I already know how to play chess. He goes, not that good, Dad. I go, how would you even know? He goes, I know. Trust me. And then there's a part of me that I just like his confidence and his attitude that makes me laugh. And so anyway, I go, what do you get? He goes, what do you mean? I said, you have to get something. I know you, Jack. What do you get? He goes, I get to take chess. And I go, no, there's something. There's a physical tangible. There's a toy in the Happy Meal.
Right.
He goes, no. And then my older son, the informant, he goes, you get a free chessboard.
Oh, there we have it.
And I go, I'll tell you what. I go, because I'm willing to bet it's like a miniature cheap one, right? I said, I'll drop $40 on a nice chess set and I'll teach you chess once a week right here at home. I go, it'll cost me $20 and it's it. He goes, no, I want it. And then the wife comes in and I go, okay. She goes, he wants to learn. Let him learn. Jacob does. Then it's about fairness. Jacob does hip hop and piano. Jack only does hip hop. So maybe this is his piano. And I was like, all right. Okay. All right.
All right.
And I go, okay, but you're taking the class. I go, all right. And because my fear is that he's going to show up the first day. The guy's going to give him the little chessboard. He's like, thank you, sir.
You better be the next Bobby Fischer. Otherwise,
not even that. I just want it, like, because to go back to what we were talking about, as long as he has the negative experience of being stuck in his class for 2 hours every week,
he's going to learn. He's going to learn. You're going to stick with it.
But if you show up for the first day and it's, sure enough, it's a little cheap and it's actually pretty cool, to be honest, but it's like a checkbook size chess board.
Okay.
You unfold it and it's all magnets. And all the pieces have little icons on them.
It's like for the plane ride.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
It's great.
Travel chess, yeah.
And he actually, they did it really smart where he didn't get the chessboard until like 2/3 of the way through the class, right? But, and then he's really smart because he waited at least 3 or 4 classes after he got the chessboard before then. But where he's stupid is his move is, I have a headache. I have a headache. And he goes, I can't go today. And so the elementary school calls me in because I didn't pick him up. He's supposed to go there right after school. She goes, Jack's here in the office. He's supposed to go to chess class, right? And I said, yeah, that's why I didn't pick him up. Is there no chess class today? She goes, no, there is, but he says he has a headache. I go, nope, that's bullshit. and you could tell that the lady goes, she goes, I kind of had a feeling. So I said, send her to chess class. I paid $185.
With a baby aspirin.
Exactly, yeah. That's what I said. I was like, because now what he doesn't understand is I paid $185 for 2 hours of childcare once a week.
That's pretty much
for
it.
For about 8 weeks.
See, what they should have done is give him the board, and then every day they come, get a new piece.
Yeah, there you go.
See?
Then yes,
you gotta incentivize. You got to show up for the whole thing to get the full set.
And so cut to today. They've got minimum day because of the parent-teacher conference.
Okay.
And I said, and so my wife is sending him off to school. Oh, by the way, last time I was talking to you, I was negotiating the walking to school because
that's right. I remember that.
Yeah. So now that's happening. I've won that argument. And I even had the glorious husband moment of my wife coming to me. She mumbles it. I don't understand. When they yell at you, that's very vocal, loud. But then she goes, you know, you may have been right about the walking to school thing. And I'm sorry, what?
I'm still waiting for mine. I'll live vicariously through yours.
This is different. You have a doctor. that's a harder hill for her to climb. You know what I mean? Like, you can't, like, the PhD after your name. Every time she signs a check, you maybe not want to put that on your checkbook. Every time she signs a check, it's just like rubbing her nose.
It's rubbing
in
her nose. But we deal in cash. That's right.
But anyway, he said, I have a headache. And I immediately announced, bullshit, go to school.
Nice.
But all of these things, and now they're going to add flag football. Is do we really need to worry about, in your opinion, being well-rounded? Or,
you know, there's a difference between being well-rounded and overscheduled.
Yeah, okay? Right.
And I think to a large degree, sometimes it's, again, keeping up with the Joneses. Okay, we see what other kids are doing. We see what other families are doing. And I think I mentioned before the break that I presently, right now in this moment, in this very hour, am actively screwing up with my own kid.
Good for you.
You know, my name is Michael and I'm a parental failure.
Oh my gosh, yes, we have to do that as a segment. We have to have a parental anonymous on the show.
Absolutely, it's got to happen. You know, come clean, it's okay. Tell us how you screwed up today.
Welcome to the club.
That's right.
Here's your chip.
Here's your chess piece.
I've been abusing children for 9 years now.
I've been overscheduling children ever since they were born. You know, So the thing is that, you know, my kid goes to school full time. Okay. And then on top of that, she enjoys ice skating. So she takes ice skating lessons twice a week. She just started just preparing for an ice skating competition, which again is not going to be, you know, the Olympics or anything, but it's her first time. So she's ramping up practice there. She's also doing a kids theater group after school, which is not part of the school, which is all the way in West Hollywood. So it's a good, you know, 45-minute drive to there, which is once a week, but for 3 hours after school. She's also doing tutoring. Okay. On top of all that, you factor in the hours worth of homework that she has in a given night, the three tests or quizzes she has in a given week.
Remind me how old she is?
Yeah, she's 8. Okay. I didn't even do this in college, you know, let alone when I was 8. Okay.
That's so true.
So I couldn't even do it now. I'm exhausted in driving her to that.
Okay? I think I broke out in a sweat just hearing you describe it.
I'm literally having a mini panic attack as we talk, you know,
and suburban.
and she, you know, and meanwhile, you know, she's been battling this cold for the past 4 weeks because everybody's sneezing and everybody's, you know, coughing and hacking and everything. And it's just, you know, it gets to a point where she actually enjoys these activities. She really does. But at what point, and again, she's 8, she can enjoy it, but maybe it's too much for her. Okay. And so one of the things I told her literally that last week was, all right, you know what? This week is actually the culmination of a lot of things. This week, her performance, her stage performance, you know, it wraps up. The big show is this Thursday night. You know, she has a dress rehearsal tonight that ends at 9, her bedtime 7:45. Okay. And so, we have all this stuff wrapping. I said, you know what, after this is over, starting with next week, the only thing you've got going for you is school and ice skating. Okay. And it's not like we got to wake up at, you know, 4 a.m. Right. and get to the farm and start training. Okay. It's no, you can do ice skating, you know, 2 or 3 times per week after school, as long as you do your homework, and that's enough. Okay. And I know of kids who are, they're doing gymnastics, they're doing Kumon, they're doing dance, they're doing all these other things in addition to school. And I think we don't judge it necessarily by what other kids are doing. I think we have to judge it based on the temperament of our own kids, what they can handle, and what's fair. I mean, where in this, if everything is going on, where's the time for free play? Okay. Free play for her right now is crash in front of the TV. Why? Because she doesn't have the energy to do anything else.
Yeah.
You know, go outside and play. Are you kidding? You know, I couldn't do ice skating for an hour. Okay. And then go play. I mean, I couldn't do ice skating for an hour. I'd be in a coma for another year. Okay. Yeah. Just to recuperate. So it's this notion of allowing there to be balance. And I think that's a concept we have to define based on the temperament and the abilities of each and every child in a sort of unique way.
So, from listening to you, kind of, I think the philosophy you might have to have is that, A, what is your kid asking to do, mm-hmm. right? And then, B, there would probably, if you use my chess example, an element of why.
Yes.
You know what I mean? Is it just because their friend is in it? Which isn't a negative, I don't think.
It's not a negative. But again, we have the both the blessing and ability as parents and as adults to look beyond the immediate gratification. Kids very often don't, okay? So the kid will say, hey, you know, my friend is in this, so I want to do it. Well, yeah, you want to do it for this one time, but this is a 15-week commitment, okay?
Yeah.
How are you going to feel by week 9?
Right.
Okay? Because, yeah, your friend's in it, but you're exhausted, and you don't even like what you're doing. You're just like hanging out with your friend.
And would you agree with using those kind of like what I'm doing with the chess classes? It creates a natural consequence where it's like, no, I remember we talked about like, I feel like it's not too much to expect even of my 6-year-old for me to say, if you're only doing this for the chessboard,
right.
We can get you a chessboard and I can teach you to play chess, but you're going to have to take all these classes. And if he says yes, then okay, well now your butt's going to all those classes.
I have this image of a bunch of 6-year-olds now signing contracts.
Yes.
You know, it's right. Like we're bringing in our legal team. All right, this is binding. All right, so if you show up for this, if we're signing up for this class, you're going. And, but it's true.
Skype in my lawyer. I can't wait to do a podcast next week. I'm getting more retainers from parents wanting to sign contracts.
That's right. And why are we Skyping with his shrink? You know,
Shapiro's like, got to get parental legal right. Zoom going.
I like that.
But I got you a tech contract.
But I think there's something to that, which is you want to make sure the consequence establishes a learning lesson, but not an epic failure. Okay. Mm. So for example, you know, him doing, how long is the chess class?
I think it's 2 months.
All right. 2 months. That's 8 weeks.
Yeah.
Okay. 8 weeks and he's already got his chess board. So he's got another, you know, 5 weeks to go
right.
or give or take. Okay. Fine. You know, he's going to have to dish it out and dole it out. So next time when he wants to do something, say, remember the chess?
Yeah.
Okay.
Right.
I'm holding that to you again. And then it clicks. Something resonates. It goes back to that old analogy of, you know, tell the kid, don't touch the stove. Don't
right.
touch the stove.
Right.
You know, at some point in time, you can say it as much as you want, but until they get a little burn, you don't want them to rest on the stove, okay, and smell the burnt flesh.
Or
you
push
know,
their hand on the stove.
Exactly.
Right.
Or, you know, yeah. or, you know, you're really going to learn. But there does need to be a consequence which leads to a learning.
Right.
Okay. And without that grounding, and it's also, by the way, a learning point for parents. What is too much?
Yeah.
You know, and I think, you know, with my own daughter, what I'm seeing is it's not even that she's disinterested or doing badly in it. She loves doing all of it and she actually does well with it. But what I see is the exhaustion.
Yeah.
Okay. And the exhaustion to that, that's where I have to look as a parent, say, you may enjoy all of this, but now I'm making sort of an executive decision. I'm making a parental decision that we have to parse it out.
Well, there's also an opportunity for them to learn and understand to prioritize. Like,
yes.
I honestly believe. Because the other part I was going to ask you, which I think ties into this point, is that they're kind of, I think, losing interest in the hip hop. They like because they go there because there's cool music being played and they're getting taught to dance and all that stuff. Sure. But then, like, they have to do a recital and the recital's happening on Father's Day weekend because of a misunderstanding with bookings. And it's just so funny because to me, I know it's not true, but to me, it's because, well, that's clearly a mom-driven activity because everybody there is mom-focused. And so when if you would have tried to do that on the third Sunday of May, whatever.
Good luck.
It's funny because I can't even remember what time Mother's Day happened.
Yeah. Good luck.
So I'm crapping on my own point. But here's the thing. So then all of a sudden they're like, wait, it's Father's Day. So my dad is doing a fishing tournament up at the cabin and he wanted us all to be there. And so I said, well, I could be there.
Right.
Mom's going to take you to the recital, but you have to be there at the recital. And they were like, no, I don't want to do dance anymore. And I go, well, that's not fair.
Yeah.
Because it's not like there were 30 kids in the class. There's
right.
6 kids in the class.
Yeah.
One of them is their friend. Mm. And their friend is only going to do it if they're there because he kind of came in because this is him branching out.
So we got half the class not showing
half
up.
Half the class is going to be gone for the dance that they've been working on for months. And I said, that's not fair to the other kids. You now have an obligation to the people that are in your dance class to be there for them to perform the recital with them. That's
right.
You're on a team.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Kind of a thing. And so... And we've always had this rule with piano and with dance that it's like if they say they want to quit, to kind of alleviate that immediate gratification mindset, is we say, okay, well, you got to finish the next month.
That's
because
right.
we have to have, whenever we pay, we have to pay for a month. And then they ask that we give them a month's notice. So that's what we have with them.
It's no different than a lease.
Right.
Okay. You could sign up for an apartment, you sign a lease. Now you may want to move, just wait for your lease to be over.
Exactly.
If you don't, you have a penalty.
Correct.
Okay. And a big penalty.
Right.
And that teaches you follow the lease, follow the terms of the lease.
Exactly.
Okay. And I think that's what we want to model with our kids and our parenting styles as well, which is you're going to do this. And it, like I said, with my own daughter, she's going to do the performance this week. It's been, you know, a little rough in terms of timing. Anyway, she's going to do it and she's going to be done with it, but we're not signing up for the next one.
Right.
Okay. And that's, I think, where again, this is an ongoing struggle with parents and kids, which is we can't always go by what our kids want or what they say they can do. I can do it. I can do it. Yeah, they can do it. But at what cost? And that's where we have to, you know, extend a little bit of parental judgment.
And the thing I'm learning from talking to this in this moment is that we have an expectation to kind of foresee the future and see all things at all times as parents on ourselves. It's like the idea of knowing what your kid can and can't handle, what your kid really, truly wants to do. Like, I think everybody can kind of take a breath and realize that's not the expectation. The expectation is like, if you have the financial ability and the time to be able to pull these things off, then great. If you don't, then you need to see that as an opportunity to show your kids, like I was saying, like how to prioritize, right? Like, and there's a greater thing to understand for them to learn the idea. It's like, well, we can't buy everything. It's money isn't endless and abound.
Well, I just had that conversation with my daughter. She's like, oh, because her birthday's in May. Mm-hmm. And she's like, what are we going to do for my birthday? I said, well, let me see what I owe in taxes. Okay. And she's like, what do you mean? I said, you know, daddy has some 1099 work, you know, that he's going to have to owe on. I said, and the fact of the matter is we'll do something for your birthday, but a lot of the budget for your birthday will depend on how much I have to pay for taxes. And, you know, I'm not trying to say, hey, look, kid, you know, Uncle Sam takes a bigger cut than you and there's a bigger priority than you.
It's big government. You know, I'd love to give you a birthday, but
this is what we call trickle down economics, kid. And so whatever we have left over trickles down to you, you know, but
you got to really get up to that upper middle class right now.
You got to really, really work it on. But it's the fact of the matter is I'd love to, you know, buy you the sun and the stars.
Right.
You know, but there's a reality here. Okay. And the reality is, and so she goes, now, daddy, that you figured out how much you owe on your taxes, what are we going to do for my birthday? And I'm like, we'll get back to that.
I like that. She's also holding your feet.
Oh,
no.
Oh, she goes back at it. Remember, dad, you had the meeting with the accountant the other day, you know? Did you talk about my birthday? I'm like, no, you know.
Oh, that's fun.
So it is this, and it's there's the concept of money, and then there's the concept of time. And I noticed that there, and this is where I go back to, you have to know your kid. Mm. Okay, I've noticed there's other parents and other families where the kid's able to travel for competitions and balance school and go to tutoring and take music classes and take art classes and attend family functions and go to sleepovers. And I'm like, oh my God, I don't know if they've got this kid on cocaine or what's going on, but this kid is just a energizer bunny and just keeps doing and does it and does it fine. My kid wouldn't be able to.
Yeah.
Okay. Not because she's lazy. She's not lazy. It's just not her temperament.
Right.
Okay. My kid is also the one who needs a full 11 hours of sleep at night.
Yeah.
Okay. She needs it. So when she goes to a sleepover and the kids wake up to go chatty, she's like, turns around, go to another room, you know, and she needs her sleep, you know? So I guess my thought on this is know your kid.
Yeah.
Okay. And it is a learning point for parents. You can try different things. This is a learning point for me. When we had two or three things going on concurrently, too much. Mm. Okay. The mistake would be if I continued it.
Yeah.
If I perpetuated it. Okay. Despite her saying, oh, I really like it. I got her to the point saying, yeah, I think we can go ahead and just do one thing.
Can you help me wrap my mind around the concept? I've seen my family kind of do stuff like this and some friends where it's like they're signing their kid up to do something that the kid isn't really that interested in for the sake of giving them, like just exposing them to something like. Because to me, I feel like you're setting yourself up for a fight because you're going to struggle with the kid to either practice that thing or go to the class.
And again, I don't think there's a right and a wrong. There's no clear cut right and wrong. I'm all for building experiences with children and giving them the opportunity. But I think what we have to do is we have to do small bites.
Mm.
Okay. If you're exposing your child to a new dish, something to eat, you don't say, here's the whole plate. I expect you to eat it all. You give them a little spoonful and say, do you like it? Okay. And I think the same goes with activities and, you know, with my daughter, she loved looking at, I remember in the first grade, violin. Okay. These look really cool. And I see the kids, older kids perform with them. So I want to take violin. So at school, you know, there was an opportunity to take like violin one or whatever it was. And you had to go out and rent a violin. She's like, can we buy one? I'm like, no, we're not buying, you know. You know, Stradivarius or anything like that. You know, we can rent one. Yeah. And, you know, it's like $150 for the year. So we rent a violin. She takes it and she does her, you know, bit for, you know, King and Country. And she plays in the school holiday performance. And I said, so you want to do it next year? She's like, no, not really. I didn't like it.
Yeah.
Fair enough. Done.
Great. Because she finished it. She stuck to it.
She stopped being interested in it midway through. But she, but yeah, again, I sort of planted a seed. Say, if you do this, we're doing it the whole way.
Right.
This is, and she goes, okay. And she got it. but she didn't want to do it anymore. If you give small bites, okay, if you do small, I think it's a mistake to try them in something new and then say, you're going to do the whole thing and you better like it the whole way through because I liked it or I never had the opportunity to do it.
Well, today in like dance class and stuff, they always let you audit a class. We've had other friends of my sons that are like, oh, I want to go take a class, and they go and check it out and they're like, not interested.
And to be fair, sometimes you'll audit something, you really like it, and then you come back. Yeah. Okay. Same goes with my, you know, again, I'm talking to my daughter because she's my N of one, but you know, she loves ice skating. She has this coach that she sees. She really likes, very patient with her. The coach recommended one time, hey, do a group class too, because you'll learn more and be with other people. So my daughter audited the one group and she's like, yeah, I like this. This is great. She came back another day and it was a teacher who was like really yelling, sort of your stern, like Bella Caroli,
battle
like,
axe.
You know, it's like, no, you're not doing it fast enough, you know, kind of thing. And my daughter's like, out. You know, she's like, no, not doing it. Out, you know, gone. She's like, I don't like being yelled at. I go, done. Okay, that's it.
So kind of sum it up, I think, know your kid, expose them in bite-sized pieces, and make sure that they carry through with some kind of a commitment that's pre-planned, yeah?
Yeah.
Well put. I love it. All right, we'll take a break and do a little moment of the week.
You made them. You love them. And sometimes you want to choke the living shit out of them. But occasionally, they give you that one sweet moment. This is that moment. Moment of the Week, brought to you by Dad Gear. All your child traveling needs packed into stylish, practical perfection. Designed by real dads for real dads and moms. Don't be the guy with a diaper purse. Be the man with a Dad Gear diaper backpack. Go to dadgear.com and use promo code DADPODCAST at checkout for 20% savings. Made in the USA.
All right, would you like to go first, Doc, or you want me to go first?
Oh, no, you go first.
All right, so mine actually happened last night, and we try to do the family game night, which is, I think, very underrated. Like, it travels below, I think, in my opinion, and maybe I'm being unfair to everybody else out there, but under the parental radar of the kind of benefit that you can have is that sometimes, sure, it breaks bad because you get a kid who lost and now they're upset. But I always like that as a win. I think the more you can experience loss and struggle.
And we're better than your family.
Yeah. Maybe that's why I like you so much too, Doc. But anyway, point is that my son, it's hard to figure out. The younger one has this little bit of wiring where he's kind of a contrarian, where it's like, if we all say we want to go Chinese for dinner, he's like, I don't like Chinese. Like, to where you have to start making him pick things first, which is another weird diabolical way that he wins.
Yeah.
Where it's, or you ask like, what do you want to eat? And then it's funny though to watch his brain crash when he'll say like, oh, I want to go to Wood Ranch, which is like a steakhouse place near here. And then everybody else goes, oh, that sounds great. And then
he's like, whoa.
Or we could do.
That's right.
And so anyway, we were going to, my wife, because she is a big fan of stupid comedies, was very excited to see Daddy's Home 2.
Okay.
And so we didn't get to see it in the movie theater. And now it was recently released on digital so we could rent it or whatever. And we were going to watch it. And he said, well, can we do, he goes, what if we do a game night? Let's do family game night. And I was like, oh, okay. And I literally just clicked on it to see if it was rentable, because now they do the thing where they want you to pay $20 before you can rent it, blah, blah, blah. And I go, oh, Jack, man. I said, it looks like you're going to lose because Daddy's Home 2 is now available to rent. And my wife in the kitchen is like, what? It's so funny to me. She loves anything with head trauma. That's our new joke. Anything that has head trauma in it, in the trailer, my wife is like, take
on
my
it,
money.
On it.
Take my money. And so, which is very fun. Now it's become like this family thing where even if the boys and I are sitting watching a trailer, my older son will be like, oh, save that one for mom.
That's
the guy
right.
got hit in the head with a snow shovel. So anyway, I said, oh, you're going to lose. And we kind of made a deal. We said, how about this? Sunday night, we don't have anything going on. We will do a family game night. And so he was like, all right. So we sit down and we got to have the best of both worlds. We all kind of cuddled on the couch.
Mm-hmm.
We let them stay up a little late because it wasn't a school night, and we watched the movie. And then Sunday night, Jack said, remember you said it was game night? So we said, sure. So we had dinner, and then he just got a deck of cards and he wanted to play this game, Slapjack. Are you familiar? Where everybody has, so you deal out even number of cards, and then everybody just blindly lays down a card.
Okay.
And you just keep going, 1, 2, 3, go, 1, 2, 3, go. And then if somebody plays a jack, the first person to slap their hand down gets the whole deck.
Oh, okay.
And the idea is to gather the whole deck. So we're playing this game. And of course, Jack loses the first game, and it's the game he wanted to play. So he, and then they start playing the game that we called it in high school bullshit.
Mm-hmm.
But now, as a parent, I know that they call I doubt it.
Okay.
And so again, you evenly deal out the cards, and then you go around. So the person to the left of the dealer starts with aces, and the idea is that they're supposed to find however many aces they have in their hand, and they put it face down, and they say two aces. Now. Okay. If they don't have any aces, they can put down two cards and say two aces. And right. then somebody else says, oh, I doubt it. And if they're right, then they pick up all the deck of the cards that have been piling up.
Gotcha.
Right?
Okay.
So what we did is we first played Slapjack. Jack lost. Then we played I Doubt It. And then I think my other son won. And then we went back and played Slapjack. And so we just played bouncing back and forth between these two games. And I got to be honest, it was delightfully fun because there was a little bit of trash talking from the, it was the first time I'd seen my kids behave like brothers, where the older one was getting annoyed with the little one's kind of attempts at cheating and he's like, why are you doing that? And it was humorous. We all were laughing, and it was just a quintessential like Norman Rockwell painting, like, you know, just suburban life where literally nothing but a deck of cards and a family playing, having laughs, having a good time. I was drinking hot tea because I guess I'm that guy now. And I had this moment where literally I look over and I see our 52 inch high definition television off. And I look back
like
at my
relic.
Yeah,
that's right. Yeah.
And I look back at my delightful family playing with some bicycle playing cards, and it was all around good times for us. Wow. All right, your turn.
Oh, geez. I don't know how I can top that.
Oh, suck it, Doc.
How do you top Norman Rockwell? You know,
you know what's funny is in my
Jackson
mind,
Pollock. That's how you do it.
I always make that reference mistake by saying Jackson Pollock. It was like a Jackson Pollock painting. My family's so like, nice. Wait, you know, what?
That's right. Exactly. You know, you know, to me, it's those little quintessential moments, those moments that, you know, sort of just kind of sneak up on you. And it was yesterday for me as well. My wife has been battling this some viral something or other, cold and bronchitis. And there's, so yesterday I decided to take my daughter out, and I said, you know, what do you want to do? She said, I don't know. And we noticed there was the Topanga Vintage Market. And every now and then we like to go to these vintage places because it's just cool to see, you know, people watch and thing watch and whatever. So she and I went, and, you know, one of my hobbies or extravagances is I love to collect old vintage movie equipment. Okay. But not like, you know, oh, this was from Jaws, even though I'd get that. I can't afford that. But like old home movie stuff from like the 30s and 40s. So cameras and projectors, they just don't make it the same way.
So not specific to a film, but just the literal equipment.
Just the literal, to me, it's a part
of nostalgia to it other than its age.
No, it's age and the fact that it's telling somebody's stories.
Mm.
Okay. And I love that because, I mean, you pick up, you know, movie cameras today are from the 80s or 90s and it's all plastic. And these things are, you know, weigh 50 pounds a projector.
So you're saying it's more appealing to you that it belonged to a person than to a studio?
Well, no, I won't shrug off a studio. Okay, I can't afford the studio. I can afford the Joneses, you know, 8mm projector. Okay. You know, so yeah, if there's any studio execs that are willing to donate some historical artifacts, you know, go to my webpage and contact me because I'll totally take it. But so we went to the vintage market, and that's my opportunity to browse and, you know, and look around. And she likes it now too. Okay, and she totally gets into it. And there's no one specific thing. Like yesterday, she was like, ooh, a typewriter. What are you going to use a typewriter for? I said, yeah, you know, you have a $1,500, computer that you don't use. You know, you're going to use it. Well, I can make stories. I said, you know, the computer can make stories too, you know. She goes, yeah, but this is really cool. I'm like, nah, okay, fine. We're looking and, you know, how much is this? Well, this typewriter is from the 1800s and, you know, it's for $700. I go, no. You know, I said, I could tell you a story, you know. For free.
About the time you're not getting the typewriter.
That's right, exactly. So we're walking around, and I actually found this projector that was, to me, it's also the look of the projector. You know, is it something unique? Is it something cool? And I saw one, and I didn't know anything about it. I never heard of the name before. And the guy who was selling goes, I said, does it work? Is it funny? He goes, I know nothing about it. I'm asking $40 for it. I go, well, we don't even know if it works. I said, and it probably weighs about 40 pounds.
Wow.
You know, and I go, that's a lot for me to carry. You know, he goes, I'll give it to you for 20. I'm like, $20. That's fine. I said, worst comes to worst, it's a 20-pound paperweight,
right.
You know, but it looks really cool. And so we're walking around with this thing now. And then my daughter Leia goes around and she sees like old vintage toy places and everything. She goes up and she sees, you know, those like, I guess you'd call them the toy vending machines. You see them at a bowling alley or something. You put the quarter in and you turn. So this guy is selling a whole stockpile of those. And she goes, I wonder how much that is. Cause who, what kid doesn't dream of having a toy vending machine in their house? So I go, I don't know. You got to, so, you know, typically she's like, well, what you ask, you know, you, can you find out for me? And I said, no, you know what? You have your money. You're interested in this. You go and ask. And she did. You know, she went up. She goes, excuse me, sir. She goes, how much are you asking for this? And he goes, well, you know, probably about $30. She goes, oh. And I see her look down. He goes, for you, I'll do 20. And she played him. She played him because I know that look. You know, that
you've got that look before.
So she haggled him for another.
Oh,
she goes, oh.
Did you weep?
No, I was beaming with pride. I had to turn away because, you know, she did this whole, oh, you know. And that was my moment. It's the fact that she.
Victory.
That she, not that so much as she haggled him down 10 bucks and she got it, but she went out there. She found something she wanted. She approached this guy she didn't know. She was involved in a discourse. She got what she, and the look of pride on her face when she later on was carrying this thing out.
Yeah.
Okay. It went right back to that concept of like, this is something that she wanted, that she, you know, went outside of her comfort zone to do. And as we're walking to the car, it was funny. She goes, that's funny, Daddy. I got something that I wanted for $20 and you got something you wanted for $20. And now we're both going to go home and learn about the things that we got.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm like, totally. That's it.
Awesome.
That's a day. You know, that. And again, it's not one of those moments that I'm going to look back 50 years from now and say, oh, remember that time we got that crappy projector? You know,
it could be.
You know, well, no, it's more about, for me, it's not about that long-term memory. It's about being present in that moment right there.
Ah, I see.
Okay. And being able to recognize it for what it was, it was just a fun, kind of like what you were saying. You see the TV in the background there and you didn't have to rely on that.
Yeah.
This was out being in the air. This was outside just doing something different. We were exercising sort of a passion for junk.
Yeah.
Okay. You know, and just going outside and doing something together that it was that bonding moment.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah,
I love it. All right, so don't forget, you could pick up Dr. Wetter's book, Earn It, What to Do When Your Kid Needs an Entitlement Intervention. That's available Amazon, wherever you get books, or you can go to drwetter.com.
That's right.
You can also hit him up for some parenting coaching there too, right?
Yeah, that's where everybody goes. Hit me up there, and the number you see is the number that goes directly to me, and also you can email me. I get all my emails directly, and I get back to people real quick.
Awesome. And if you want to follow him on Twitter, it's at Wetter Psych, WetterPsych. But again, all of the links for that are in the description of this episode. And I think that's it. Thanks so much for being on the show. Appreciate
awesome,
you.
Man.
All right. On behalf of Dr. Michael Wetter, this is Justin Worship saying hug your kids, hump your loved one, and stay frosty, my friends.